My very first failure, my very first issue that we had to return, I think it was close to 400,000 rand. But the moment we probably start looking at some of the products that are Africans and that are considering some African design language, the design system, will that also be adopted similarly as we adopt when something comes out? But then that was already the initial start of, I can use what I have and then get some cash out of it, whether it's 150 rands or whether it's 200 rands. And then you're like, okay, so I can contribute and I can actually feel that I'm a good value within, you know, the house, and I can assist. I've always had my fears when it came to how do you take this and then run by yourself. You know, some circumstances will also put you in a situation of making decisions.
Yeah. Good day.
Hello. Welcome to the Angle Podcast. We have a special guest in the building. An entrepreneur, a teacher of mine, and an overall good guy. He claims he's better than me at basketball, but I'm yet to break his ankles.
Let's see.
How are you doing?
I'm good, Sunli. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for making the time, brother.
Thank you.
Truly appreciate your time. You've done a lot of work around different sectors, if you may. When I met you back in 2015 or 14, somewhere back there.
Yeah, 14.
You were a UX guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Couple of years later, you are into gamifications.
Yeah.
And you now have a number of products out of those ventures around gamifications. Mm-hmm. What has your journey been like?
Hey, Stanley, it's been interesting. I might say it's been interesting.
Yeah.
I think at the core of it, yes, it might look like it's different spaces, but I've always been interested in one, problem solving, and then two, interaction design, right?
Yeah.
So combining those two then, you know, ends up leading us into discovering what are the different ways that we can do it, especially in a digital,
yeah,
you know, economy. And I think that's how it's always been, right? That's how it's always been. I've and then got plugged in the social impact of things. And that is where I then, you know, developed a lot more of an interest in how do you help people as well? How do you not just help product being built? How do you not just help engagement being driven to the product, but how do you then get to also help people and get them to actually be versions of themselves that they might have not discovered yet? Just the same way we look at discovering how good could this product be, where could we take it,
right,
you know, with all those. So the journey has been that, where it didn't just get packaged into the rules that I use in UX. And if you remember, I always used to make analogies of real life situations.
Yeah.
So whatever that is, scientific or creative, I will then bring it into how does it apply to a particular individual.
Yeah.
And all those rules, frameworks, how does it apply to an individual? Yeah, I think that's how one can know, look at.
When did the bug bite? When did you realize that you are more entrepreneurial in your approach as opposed to somebody who would otherwise seek for formal employment?
And he captured the original bug that bit him. That's what's with him today.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's looking at him.
I think it's good memories and something.
Mummified.
To be honest, guys, I'm not the typical of I knew when I was five or I knew. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Personally, right? But I do know that I had just never, you know, I've always had my fears when it came to how do you take this and then write by yourself. But I've always had to beat those fears, right?
Mm.
So I started mainly as a creative. So growing up, I've always drawn. So that is what my passion has always been. Drawing, making comic books. And that was my way of telling stories, right? I would either interpret other stories, Dragon Ball Z, and then I then come infuse my own, you know, episode that I've thought of. And then I'm making a comic book or something like that. But then, first time that I got introduced to something that I would say was paying was when a friend of my dad came from France, and then she wanted to have her and the two kids, you know, drawn, you know, do a nice kind of sketch and painting. So she went to a school where the actual school, that the school of art, to find someone who could help her do that. When when they finished, she did not like what was the result of it. And then she came in and my dad was like, no, my kid actually likes to draw, and so can you, can he do that? And for me, I took in the challenge, right? I'm like, I'm going to do it because I've got something to then prove here. So I did it, and then she ended up saying that she wanted to pay me double because she liked the black and white version that I had made versus what that, the one that is considered to be the professional, you know, who was studying it. I was not studying it, right? So my dad never wanted me to actually study art. But I was good at it. He just, for him, it was just like, no, I'm not going to send you there.
What is it about dads? Like, dads never want you to do, like, the cool stuff.
I mean, I don't know.
They want safe careers.
Mine too. It's like, come on, man.
It's always gets very weird like that. Right. But then you then kind of get to learn maybe later or something. Right. But that for me, yes, it was early days. I was not in a formal, you know, art education. But I ended up doing something that was a bit of a transaction where I was able to get money from it and then do something. So I also wouldn't say that from that time on, I knew that I wanted to just sell work. But when it actually probably hit properly was when I worked for this company after I graduated. And then maybe probably now that you're asking, probably before that, you know, some circumstances will also put you in a situation of making decisions. And some of the decisions that I had to make were when we had challenges at home, when, you know, you had to assist the family to at least take care of your siblings in a certain way. So for me, I looked at what do I have as a talent. And then whenever there was an opportunity, I will then, and that I think I was in second year, I would then ask someone, hey, if you know someone who wants to do logos, then can do it for him. Because then I was in the formal education there of art. But then that was already the initial start of, I can use what I have and then get some cash out of it, whether it's 150 rands or whether it's 200 rands. And then you're like, okay, so I can contribute and I can actually feel that I'm a bit valued within, you know, the house, and I can assist. And then it became more serious when I actually, you know, when I think work was starting to become boring. Went to, got an internship, and then after my third year, got this at this company. I was doing multimedia and web design work there, and there was always so much limitation to what I had to do. And then one day, I think at the end of the first year, I actually went back to him. He was actually a cool guy. I went to him and I told him that, listen, let's do this. I go next year, I don't come back, and then you just become my client, and then you tell me when you want stuff. And then I'd rather then do that because I'm not doing enough here. And then you can see that I want to do a lot, but your clients are not, you know, having that foresight to see these ideas are actually good. So he would then say they want a website. And then I'm like, can we not make something that is a bit more interactive on the website? Why does it have to be static? And he's like, no, they just want a website. So those things for me were becoming conflict, which I thought, if I go out, I'll probably have the opportunity to start expressing myself and then, you know, experiment and then see how I can build something that at the end of the day will make sense.
So you mentioned earlier your journey into interactive design. Maybe firstly, just define for us what you mean by interactive design. I mean, I know what you mean, but just for our listeners. But And maybe just, I mean, you've hinted at it now in terms of your journey into that a little bit, because that starts going into a space I'm quite keen on. Like, you're not a game developer per se, but you did a little bit of it, and you're moving into gamification, or you did move into gamification. Yeah. And maybe just explain what you mean by that as well.
So in terms of the interaction design part, right, for me, I think it's always been how do we make things move? So I'm going to tell you something else, which I used to tell people before, right? Growing up, I've always seen myself and never, ever to compete with God. But I've always seen myself as a little God. That's how I always used to compare that, right? And then when they would ask me why, I'm like, it's because I can draw emotions out of people with what I draw. So if I draw something, there is an interaction. If I draw something that is, you know, that is sad or sensitive, you will then also react to that. If I do something that is supposed to make you happy, you will then react to that. So that for me has always been the foundation of what kind of things I wanted to see. When I draw something, can it become something that there is now an interaction between the human and then whatever they're actually consuming versus it's just being passive, which happens in movies and happens in other places. But then the ability to look at how do we even make something as simple as color choices? How do we even make something as simple as an animation that does not have to be a person jumping and smiling, but just a swipe? How do we make that to be enjoyable for a person? And how do we draw emotions out of just you swiped and then that page moving from the other side got you to actually feel like you're excited? So I mean,
the dating apps, for example, that swipe, it's perfect, right? It gives you, there's all kinds of emotions involved there.
Yeah, yeah.
To go for the dating, yeah.
I mean, you know the swipe, right? The kind of feeling that you have, and you know, you don't do much, but you express yourself with a lot, right? So, and that was one of the things that as I was progressing, it's always been at least an interest that I can say that it's always been an interest to say, how do we do it differently? How do we do it like this? How do we do it like that? And I remember one of our first project when I was in second year, we had a project technology something with this lecturer who I was not very much happy with him because he liked showing us YouTube videos instead of teaching us. And that was actually one of the reasons why I went back to education. It was mainly because of that. So he then said, go and then come up with an innovative idea. Just pick something. And that was the first time when we went, explored. I mean, we did not have the luxury to have free internet or anything, but it was a group project. So me and this other friend of mine, who actually was the guy who got me to be in that company after we graduated because he got the job there before. He was a brilliant guy. So we then came up with a thing, an idea that we were like, dude, what about if we have glasses and then through glasses you can actually see things that get overlaid? We honestly, and I can tell, we didn't know about Google Glasses. We didn't know about
VR goggles
because at the time they were not yet there. The one that was trying, which was still, I think, under research, was actually Google Glasses, because I think 2 years later, that's when we actually started seeing what Google Glasses, what they were trying to do. But for us, for me and him, that's why we kind of enjoyed working with each other. It's because we would often just think about whatever and then be like, we need to make it interactive. But him, he was more the kind who would tell me, he's like, Kim, you don't know what you're missing out. So he used to like smoking weed.
Right? Oh, okay.
So he would often be like, Kim, you don't know what you're missing out. You know, these ideas of us would have been this if you were at the same level as me. But I'm like,
if you were high.
I'm like, but you'd go there and then we create the balance. Because I never wanted that. But that is the kind of things. And I think I even have a video example of it still on my YouTube, on my YouTube channel, on my YouTube page where we used to put schoolwork. There's a video where we had to create a demo video of it in After Effects so that the lecturer can actually mark it, because we obviously could not do it practically. So that video is still there. And that was way before the time that we thought. So it's always been that journey for me, honestly.
So this creative and interactive work has always been a part of you,
yeah.
like from early childhood.
Yeah.
Does that explain how you quickly transitioned into UX UI design? I mean, you started this before it was even a thing.
Yeah.
It was very early on. I had never heard of UX
UI. Of that time, yeah.
Right. Until I met you. I was like, what is this? And ever since then I've never looked back. I've never touched a line of code.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems it's like a part of you to create, to design, to create interactive thing without you necessarily even having to look way too much outside of yourself.
Yeah.
So almost like you naturally gravitated towards UX UI design because it's just part of you. Does that also explain why you've never really had a company that offers UX UI design? I mean, trying to look up the companies that you have founded, it doesn't seem like there is much around UX UI design unless apart from consulting and those type of things. Is it that it's so much a part of you, you did not have to create a vehicle for it?
I would say probably yes. And also, honestly speaking, I never really liked the... I think what I enjoy to create or what I enjoy to do has constantly never had a definition the moment that I was doing it until in the future, in my view. That's how it's always been. And because, and I've always had this issue before, right? And I've told this to a lot of my student actually before. I'm like, why are the design languages or design system or design rules that come up are often only based on the ones that have got the means to give us product to then consume? Then they create, oh, we now have a liquid design style, and then everyone else in a design field start doing liquid design, right? But the moment we probably start looking at some of the products that are Africans and that are considering some African design languages or design system, will that also be adopted similarly as we adopt when something comes up? Because if you check with a lot of designers, the moment something comes out or the moment Apple goes through all those years of research and then they then bring out something, or Google, then you've got, oh no, all of us, let's do material design.
Right,
and then you start designing material design. So when you then attempt and then you are not part of the mainstream, you then constantly will be like, I want to do this, but then when you want to present it to someone, they will be like, no, but let's do this. There was a time when I was doing logos for companies, right? And that's why you would even see on my website or whatever, I'll never put there that services, we provide logo design. No, because you would rather want to provide an experience, a holistic experience. That's what then encompasses all the different elements. So even if we can't just do the design part, but we can at least advise and then say, this is what we can advise you to rather consider doing. So during that time, there was a time when someone came and gave me a brief and said they wanted to do a logo. And then I asked, okay, fine, do you have, you know, colors that you looking into before I actually make suggestions based on your company goals and stuff? And then they said, no, I wanted blue. So when you ask, and then I ask, okay, why do you want it blue? Right. So we've got design philosophy that we always look into, and we're like, okay, if you have something that is black, that will be a little bit more of a, you know, prestige, corporate and all those things, right? Which you can have as theory. But when you ask them, why do you want it blue? And then they said, no, because Facebook is blue.
Oh.
So during that time, when Facebook, Twitter, all those that were coming were blue, then someone who wanted to be in the tech space were thinking, maybe I might also make it blue.
So <What? laughs> nobody got fired for buying IBM.
Do what works. So yeah, that's for me what it is. It's always been part, I believe, and whether I'm fully aware of it or not aware of it, but it's always been part of how do we then rather do something. And that's why even when we started with educational games, again, there was not that term of edtech.
No.
It was not there. And we were starting it like back then. The first game that I made was very buggy. way back it was on those Android that have got different screens, and then you're fighting with the screen sizes and all of that. And then it was a zoo game, right? Oof. But then I didn't know about optimizations and all that. So we put, like, because I can do 3D modeling, so we put all those things in there and then made the game and then published it. That game, those years, had gotten 70,000 downloads.
70,000 downloads.
But with many, many, please fix it, please fix it. It gets a bit slow here, please fix it, please fix it. But that game was actually initially built because I was thinking of people who live in the remote areas and have never gone to the zoo. Can I then give them a thing where they can learn what is the sound of this particular animal, and then they can then explore it on a mobile device?
Right.
So you were exploring something that was not yet matured to support all these sizes of 3D models, and now it's different. And then you were also exploring something that now would have been considered as edtech. But I did not know what was the term at the time. There was no one who was fully, you know, pushing and I would say coining it.
Right.
So you end up doing until you then realize, oh, okay, now everyone else is catching up, and that's what it means for them.
So tell us about Mind City. What is that? What do you guys do?
Mind City is the main product that that we have as part of Kim Art Studio.
Right? Is that a product of Kim Art Studio?
It's a product of Kim Art Studio, actually.
Okay.
So Mind City is a product of Kim Art Studio. The company is always still Kim Art Studio, right?
Okay.
And the company, what it's always done is consulting as well as development. And then the consulting has always been around how do we help you get what you want to do, right? Whether it's from a developing a product or gamifying your product, just that, or whether it's implementing it technically. What we then added recently has been mostly the business of gaming. That is where we then, because of the realization, so we're like, no, we can then also offer this as a service for anyone that wants to jump into gaming. And I will explain that later. Then the other part has been, how do we then become a bit more sustainable? We've always liked building product. So how do we then build a product internally that actually encompasses what exactly my vision as a person is, right? And my vision as a person has always been, what is, for instance, the teacher of the future? What is that student in the classroom? What exactly is that student? Not seeing him as a product of just, let's give him all the maths and all the physics and everything in the head, because that's what we want to build out of them. But how do we break some of the important things that these students have? And then it started going all the way to now employees, because started realizing that it's more of a workforce issue. So it's a learning and development platform, right? But we, on our side, we say that we are in everything learning and development, because we focus a lot more on what exactly is learning and development. When do you do the learning? When do you do the development? What exactly do you define as growth, and how do you measure that growth?
Right.
So a typical example would be that you've got employees in a company, and then you as an HR, we want to give you back your 8 hours. In most cases, you would want to do performance review, you want to understand your employees, but you're not a psychologist.
Yeah.
So we then built the platform to be something that you can use in your company, and then it uses AI and all other tools to then provide you immediate feedback onto whatever you take. But then the data also gets to be shared with the HR, where they can have an insight. And then when they get to see feedback on if 300 employees did take emotion intelligence in the organization, can I know now what is the percentage of, you know, what is that level? How many of my employees are actually doing well and how many are not doing well? So that's basically what Mind City does. And we do it from career readiness, career exploration, career success, and then entrepreneurship. So we'll then have modules that we then assist entrepreneurs as well, to assist them with resilience, So all soft skills related aspects. Mm. That is what the
How's it getting picked up in the market? You guys busy, or I mean, how is it?
It's getting busy. I might be honest. It's getting busy. We've been converting quite well in terms of, you know, whenever we start off with a pilot, which most people want in this edtech space, and then when you turn into it, you know, the conversion is quite good. We currently have like Alan Gray, we are assisting them with scaling the intervention and awareness on skills. Trade skills and also you know, artisanal skills. So we then go to the schools, and then learners get to take, like, how do they feel about this? They get to watch a video through the platform, and then they get to get another assessment, those kind of things. So it's one of the clients. So it's starting to pick up, starting to get busy.
Who is Mindcity Builder in relation to Mindcity?
So what happened there, and I get what happened there is Mindcity was then set up to be initially I wanted to be a standalone organization, right? But then we realized that no, we still needed to be as part of Kimar Studio. Oh. But then we still created the NPC for it, which is our leg where we then engage on that front. But then the platform itself sits on Mindcity Builder. Right, so the platform itself is Mindcity, but because we've got like Mindcity, we've got Mindcity Sport,
right,
where we built games that are specific to sport. So one of the clients that we working with is the coach of one of the coaches of the Blue Bulls. So we built the games that infuse psychology and gamification to then have the players engage with the game, where we're trying to develop more reaction time, more awareness. So that's why you would see that there would be some element of Mindcity.
Yeah, it's like this. It's like that whole area of game development that doesn't. It's not the sexy part of game development. It's not the you know, indie game dev studio doing like cool creative work.
Yeah.
But your work's still cool and creative, but it's not in that. In my view, it's probably the game dev space is kind of like this vertical, but then there's this huge other space outside of that that no one actually really sees about.
Yeah.
There's all the gamification, the work that individual clients will, for example, develop bespoke, you know, games for their particular purposes.
Yeah.
It's in that space that I'm actually kind of want to nudge you and talk a little more about. How did you get into that? What did you, like, is that just a natural interest for yourself? But, I mean, how did you market yourself in this space? Like, how did you kind of create that a market for yourself?
For myself, the initial point was probably when I went to Ethiopia. So I went to Ethiopia, I applied for this competition, and it was a competition where you would have all different people that had started to spark a bit of an interest in problem solving, and then a bit of gamification for others. And then they brought us there, different from Africa. And then you would then have people from all around Africa, and then we got there, and then we had to then compete. Mm. So they put us there for like four days where we had to go through a workshop organized by a German institution. And then after that, we then had to go into a three-day, like, kind of hackathon. We had to pick a social problem. And then from that social problem, we then had to come up with a solution that was using gamification to resolve that. So the problem that I had picked was the tribalism. And then I was looking mostly into tribalism in Kenya because it's quite part of the continent. It's quite a place where it's still quite.
I presume your solution there for gamifying that was non-violent. It wasn't like.
No, it was non-violent. Actually, it was non-violent. It was extremely non-violent.
From the side with a spear out there to get you.
No. They have quite a huge issue, you know, quite a thing. It's you know, but I think it's improved now. But that was like in 2015, I think. 15 or I think. So we. What then happened there was, How do we not use violence? How do we use other mechanics? How do we use other things to then make sure people understand? So what was done, and that was the early days of me also exploring technology. So what I created, the game I had created was using cardboard. Right. So if you know cardboard, you would know, right? So cardboard and then the phone inside. So obviously they now at least have a bit more clarity in terms of the size and the stuff that needs to go on there. So the game was, you get teleported into a tribe that you don't know about.
Right.
And then what get introduced to you is someone comes and then says, hey, please make a dish for me. And then you just have to select elements that you have to make the dish with. And then you go into the next place. Oh, can you please play some music with these drums? And then you do some. So it was those three elements. Now, why was those elements picked? Because looking through things, in my understanding was that everyone on the planet sees a tree. Everyone in the world sees a tree. And then that tree with the leaves can actually be green, right? But then the moment we start creating differences is when we choose what are we going to do with that particular tree, but then they all have the same kind of elements. So you eat the same food, but then you cook it differently, but you are you have the same ingredients.
Right.
But you just cook it differently. Now, if I show you that the person that you consider, Stanley, is not from my tribe, is a problem, but then why are you eating the same thing as him? How much of difference does it make between you guys, right? You still use the same drum to just make a different melody. How much difference does it make between you? And then at the end of the game, that is when we then tell you, oh, by the way, look at the similarity that you've had. This is actually a Kikuyu tribe. Now, let's see whether you still have a different perception about those people, because some of these tribalism issues are because it's trained and you're being told that. So that's when I got into the space of a lot of these things would then differentiate me if I use the different elements that have got people who have a problem that they would want to solve, but in most cases they don't have the technical on how to solve it. And then in most cases they would not want to just go and say, let's just build another app, because it doesn't always solve everything. The same way I always tell people, when you want to bring in gamification into anything, what the hell are we just having point and leaderboards? Right? So I'm currently doing my final studies in my master's, which is focusing on gamification, right, for education specifically. And then that's something that I'm writing something about it. I'm probably throwing here that there might be a book coming. But anyway, I'm writing something about it.
There you go.
So
you heard it here first.
So the interest there for me is a lot of the people, or a lot of us that build gamification solutions, we don't do a lot of the research to understand why exactly, and this is a question, right, which I can pose for any of you that have been through this. Why do we have in education technology, the moment you ask someone for gamification, they will say, okay, fine, we're going to add points, right? And then secondly, they say, no, we'll have a leaderboard. Do they understand the psychology of people outside of the digital space when they are in the classroom? Who is that one kid who does not raise his hand because he feels not confident enough that either kid will laugh at him? Now, if you go and build a leaderboard and then you show all the kids and then that kid is always at the bottom, how much of a motivation that are you still creating more engagement? So those are where I then find more interest. And that is where I realize that, you know, the implication into non-game related or people who don't necessarily build games, that is where I would be able to engage. And then I got to have you built this with this person, and then they are happy, and then they go, and then, you know, it takes a bit of time because of the business and the demand. And then you find that you get a call next week and it's, oh no, I had someone, you know, that you did this, referred me to you for you to do this. And then that person, so to be honest, there's been two things that I've always said, people that I've worked with that we had a good relationship with, and then God, that has always been my salesperson, my sales rep. So
yeah, he's been selling very well for you.
No, that's the way that it's been for me, to be honest.
Is it a common thing in the industry to notice people sort of lack of innovation in the sense that there's almost like a direct translation of the problem. Like you just mentioned now, they want the scoring, the leaderboard thing, because that almost interprets the report card, right? Mm. You have a number there, so much percent, and you have a position to say, is it a lack of innovation or just people not understanding product?
I think it's not even a lack of innovation. It's just not understanding. I think it's not just doing your research enough. Mm. I wouldn't say it's not even understanding product. It's not understanding people. And that's where the user experience come in.
Right.
When you look at games, there are different typologies of players. There are killers, there are adventurers, there are explorers. So if you realize that in this vast area of people, there could be 60% of killers, 60% of adventurers, 30-30, what are you putting in place in your product that then fits them? So that if I don't like leaderboard, at least I will like this other thing and I'm still motivated with this.
Yeah.
If I don't like that, at least. And that's where my motivation and my interests in kind of democratizing education structures had actually come from.
Every few years, I've always been kind of interested in the space of gamification. Every few years in the sort of popular media, there's a story that comes up, gamification, this company's doing that, or there's a gamification for education for more specifically. But then it kind of goes away again. A few years later, there's someone that does another story on, some school trying something. But it never really seems to stick in my view. I'm sure there's examples otherwise. Why do you think that is? Based on your work, like you've just been describing, like maybe the mechanics of how you gamify education may not work, like the end result with leaderboards and so forth. What would be your viewpoint as to what would work in your mind in terms of, and maybe take a specific example like mathematics. I was okay at mathematics, but mathematics for me almost lends itself quite nicely to a gamification to help you learn it. So what would be your views there?
So my research is actually been specifically on gamification, right? Using gamification, but using reward systems to actually improve the pass rate in mathematics in South Africa. Now, where am I doing it? I'm not looking at samples that is focusing on like grade 12, because that is already a big problem. We've got reports that often speak about grade 4, right? Grade 4 learners, and that is where the biggest issue is. That's where it starts. It starts like that. Now, when you look at that, and then you realize that, okay, my user persona, grade 4 student. And let me maybe put it this way. Some of the engagement that I've been doing as part of the consulting has been working with incubations or accelerators. We then bring in that business of gaming into play, and then we support them. And then we say, the formula that you've been using is not working. We have a framework that we would rather you use. Let's then look at using that framework throughout the program, right? Mm-hmm. Where we also understand the people. And I can tell you, I've engaged with a lot of gaming studios, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them, actually, you guys had him here, Tabo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Space
their very studios, first game, I'd actually built a prototype of that game. The people that, take trash and stuff, and then they continue
Dobadash.
Yes. So it's always been part of the services that I would do with accelerators, where we're like, okay, those who are not really sure, we can then help them build that minimum viable, and then they can now take it from there, right? That becomes a bit of a push from the investment. But across all the people that I have actually dealt with, to be honest, I have not come across a studio that put a user persona on the wall.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's, to be honest, a user persona on the wall to then say, how do we make this person to actually consume our product so much because you have it on the wall? I have not.
Right.
So part of the processes has been that I would then take them through the design principles, the design processes, and then the UX pattern, and say, let's focus on the users. Let's understand where, when, how, so that once you understand them, let's now interrogate this that you want to put in. does it fit this person? Mm. This feature that you want to put, does it fit this person? Most of the time, because they think that, no, it's a creative space, then you don't need to do it. But I always tell them, think about why.
You're still building a product.
You're still building a product, right? Yeah. Think about why some of these casual games, hyper-casual games, why they came from mostly from Europe. Why they emanated mostly from Europe. It's not Asia, because Asia also had their own style, right? It's not America, because America always had their own style with console, as much as they've got mobile devices, but it's not. But then if you look at these Candy Crush and all of these, the companies where they emanated from were mostly coming from that Europe area.
Right.
When you then understand that they had to build things for commuters, because they use a lot of trains there. Someone commuting, you don't want that person after work to then be going into a, you know, competing game.
Right.
They
just
need to be there on their phones, and then they're doing one thing, and then you're actually stimulating and assisting them. If you don't understand that user, how do you then create this big wave of casual games that started coming, and then everyone else also now started going on to it? Clash of Clans, Clash of those would be considered as combat, right? But if you ask someone here, please make a game that has to do with combat, it seems like it often has to be 3-5 buttons, and then you have to fight each other crazily. But it's understanding the people. For me, I take that as, you know, one of the very important thing is how you, what do you want to do with them? Where are they going, these people?
Right.
When do you want them to play this? At what time of the day? And those are questions that I always ask them. What time of the day do you want them to play this? Because it plays a part into the building of the product.
Sure.
That would be my view mostly to why it doesn't stick. Because sometimes we just add without really understanding those particular people. Why should they then have that? And at the end of the day, the moment they're done, then what do? They leave. Right. On Mind City, we don't have like crazy gamifications. And for someone who speaks of gamification, you will go, you will see that the most gamification that I can tell you we have on there is immediate feedback.
Oh.
Because it is a component of games.
Mm.
You have either sensory feedback, you've got haptic feedback. So for us, the most, it's immediate feedback. Why did I put immediate feedback? Because I realized that I'm not going to go and simulate a whole work situation, right? I would rather look at where the problem is, where growth happens. Growth happens between when you do something and then when exactly growth has to happen. It's in between here. The longer it takes to get feedback, the more you are perpetuating the issue. The shorter you actually make it, then the better we can start having people and individuals who are now saying, okay, I get it. I failed fast and then I did this. And that is why we focus a lot more on, we want to use AI as well as much as possible to then just give you immediate feedback. And then let growth start happening like there.
Shush. Does that explain why you have a few educational games than other games? I mean, Ambani, which is a language, I think it also has gamification to teach people how to learn.
There how to learn, yeah.
Mind City, I think, the math game.
The math game, which we are, that one we retired. Okay. We were focusing mostly on just grade 4. We intentionally chose not to go and do grade 12 interventions. I've got my, I'm very against interventions at FET.
Oh.
No, I'm very much against Why? Against that. No, we do the same thing again. We don't understand where the problem starts. There's a saying, and I don't know if they also have a saying here, but there's a saying in Congo.
Right.
You can only put a tree straight back when it actually still.
Oh, yeah.
You don't now have a tree that bends like this, and then now you're like, ah, okay. What do we do at that time? We cut.
Right.
We don't put it straight, we cut.
I hear you. So you're saying it's a little too late at that
time? No,
point.
It is. It is. It is. If
There's
I've made
no way
my,
you're bending it
no,
back, you're
breaking if I've
it
made,
at that point.
If I've made my choices of my subject choices, right? And then I was misguided in making those subject choices. And then I go with them into grade 10, grade 11, grade 12. And then when now you see one of my cells in the brain, when now I mature a bit, and then now I meet someone, and then you meet Kim, and then Kim tells you is there by, you know, TUT, and then you're supposed to have your applications. And then they tell you that, no, You see that dream that you always had, but you can't apply for it now anymore because you made the wrong choices. Ooh. Where should I have fixed that? Not in grade, not when I'm
not
applying for it,
queue.
But when I was supposed to be advised at that time. Now, sometimes you've got people that do that form where they try to understand what they like, and then a school does not even give them feedback on time, or takes like a whole 6 months, then they get like fit. So the time that we keep on taking, it's what's going to cause a lot of issues. Take longer, then we're going to have to do. You take longer to fix what's supposed to be fixed in grade four, and then you want to go fix it there. Think about how many years as that now became a thing. I'm comfortable not studying. I only study maths 30 minutes a day. I started it in grade four. And then you want to make me now study maths 2 days a week in grade 12.
What difference is that going to make? All right. The startup failure, I can't help but think about the startup failure when you speak about late intervention instead of early intervention into how to introduce different systems to help someone grow or have a business scale. The startup failure in South Africa is bad. I mean, the startup, the rate of the failure, that is, I think the stats say that 70% of startups fail within 3 years. Mm. And if you look at about 2 years, you'll see like a 50% failure rate. Mm. How much of this failure rate is related to the lack of personas, a product that is built against a particular persona, a product that is built having followed UX, UI, or rather just UX processes to make sure that they deliver a solid product. How much of this failure rate in South Africa is related to the lack of user-centered design, would you say?
User-centered design. I would say...
It's just simple local research.
I would say there is
Why isn't anybody doing it? Why is this such
no,
a...
No, no,
no.
You know what?
Rate?
I think we do a lot of assumptions, Stanley.
Okay.
Right? And I think some of us, we need to be honest, some of us are privileged to have, I don't know if I should say chosen, to be aware, you know? Some of us are, I think some of us are also privileged to do that, because some of these issues, some of these things that we're speaking about, and I was speaking about it with a friend of mine, because I've been across different incubations and startups and things, I always ask, when an incubation is a startup itself, how does a startup helps a startup to grow when they are also busy going to pitch so that they can also grow? Now, when they pitch so they can also grow, they've got a system that, one, my very first failure, my very first issue that we had to return, I think it was close to 400,000 rands.
Say what?
We had to return.
Money back.
My friend, we had to return the money back because the client came back and then they say that, nope, I'm no longer happy with this. Those were the time when they wanted us to build games for soccer games, and they wanted to build for Android, right? So we worked to figure out a way that we're going to do it, and it was just me and this other friend of mine.
Right.
We had to return.
400K.
I'm telling you. And at the time, I'm speaking about 2016 or so. 2016.
Goodness me.
It was good money.
It's
but we had now. Let me tell you what we had to return. We were under an incubation, right? But the incubation did not have any legal person that could assist us for us to write things properly, to say that if this is a deposit and we are doing work, how do we then? So we didn't have that. So we found ourselves that the client had a very good legal team. Oof. And then we just had these things that we wrote because we were excited.
There was no
ChatGPT. So they couldn't even have said, oh, you might be missing a clause here.
Mm.
So there is a lot for me that I would say that is related to not understanding Stanley, right? Because if I understand Stanley, and then I know that Stanley likes these kind of sneakers,
right,
then I would need to make sure that I adapt to his need and then give him what he needs, right? So in most cases, when you look at everything that we often do, like you you realize that, one, the structure, the infrastructure is really a problem, especially in the gaming space, for instance, if I use as an example. You have a manager of a hub or of a program that has never built a game. I've been in a place where managers even told me, I don't even play these things.
Oh.
As long as they just get... So if you don't play, if you're not, you know, and that's invested where I always said the difference between what we do and what happens, for instance, in places like YC.
Right.
If you look at the people that are there at YC, those people were involved in startups at some point, right? And then they got to now be there, they got to grow, they got to do whatever they have to grow. Yes, here we've got the formal space. But also asking Sandy to leave his startup to then go and head up this particular space, they would look at, but that Stanley has a master's, or that Stanley has this, then he would then come here. But if we really, really honest, a person who does not understand this particular space, a startup that is also trying to assist another startup, and then you expect them to fully understand, you know, how to direct this other person. Now, this other person also, they have to do their own stuff. We can't keep on having us modeling stories from the US, which I always tell people.
Yeah.
The way they build stuff in the US, right, is because of a problem that they thought in the US.
Right.
And then you hear, you wake up and then you say, I also want to go build the next Uber.
Right.
Right. And then I ask you, why?
Because Uber works.
Is it because, you know, Stanley told you, if you built this, I'm going to ride money in your car? Or is it because you saw Uber had money?
It's money. I saw Uber making money. And so I think
at
I can
the end of the day,
competitor.
We start missing the problems that we have that we can solve, where you can get something out of.
Right.
Because Bill Gates had, I always say, Steve Jobs had a garage, right? You and I, you started whatever. Most of us, literally most of us, we started whatever. Did you ever have a garage?
No way.
Why do you have a garage empty anyway?
To start with.
So understanding our context, for me, I think context is very important. It's very important, because you will then find something,
right?
And you realize that. And I like this thing, you know, do things that don't scale, which is being mostly spoken about. But when you look at it from its simplest explanation, is can you do this repeatable thing, right? And with that, it's not scaling yet.
Right.
Can you do, if I do it manually, if I were to then come and serve you coffee every day, can I get R5 out of it? And can I make this something that can be sustainable?
Right.
You can tell me, how many of those things can we do?
Sure.
There's definitely a few, but we often want to go for what becomes too difficult.
What Silicon Valley says is
and doable. The system. You know what, Sandy? If we were to talk only about this, is another session of a podcast, because there's so many things that are wrong, and that unfortunately, you know, we have a government that put some policies and regulations because they're like, you know, with the strategies we want to improve this. Now the people that come in and then look and then they say, in this strategy there's so much loophole,
their job is just to find the loopholes,
this is gonna be good. They did not write that we must stipulate how much money we give to the people. Fine, so we're gonna use that. So when we get the entrepreneurs there, we then tell them that, okay, we are giving you R20,000 each, and then they tell you that, but R20,000 each, it's coaching.
Oh yeah.
And then it sits there. What has been reported there is that we have invested $200 million to people. But then you're like, you were giving coaches that have not even built something to these people.
Sure.
And the coach like gives you a YouTube video to watch or something.
Goodness me.
So now explain to me.
The problem is layered.
If you don't involve you who speak to entrepreneurs,
yeah,
and entrepreneurs who have gone through at least a different set of, if you don't involve them into when they even want to make those decisions,
it's a problem.
It will constantly be a problem.
Yeah. So what is the opposite of that? The startups or the funders that actually get it right, how do they do it?
I think they pick what they have to want to do, right? Yeah. They pick the industry, right? And then they get the right.
It's also layered. The success yeah. is just as layered as the failure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you've a combination
got,
of things.
You've got. You also have your. You know, because the network part is very important. The network part is very important. You know, there are some people that don't want to understand that. You need, when you find something, make sure that it works, right? Make sure that it works and then do it to know whether it's going to work. You don't always have to use technology to solve everything.
Right.
If you think about
yes,
people
you do.
That...
Yes, you do. Pro tech corner here.
I mean, if you think about people that are doing tutoring, for instance, right? That's doing tutoring businesses. You will look at this person and then they are telling you that, no, we're doing well. Tech came and then tech is still there, but we've been giving. You then ask, what is the thing that they actually sell to people for them to still have a parent saying that, I'm trusting you to improve my child's space? So for me, understanding that, and it comes back to these things, maybe that they say, no, the things that don't scale, you keep those that actually you can do a lot of good work with, reputation and all of those things. So we have a lot, and for as long as people will still, for as long as us, and I'm not saying that I've never gotten to fail, right? It took time. If I tell you the iterations of Mind City, for instance, the struggles that we've had at Ambani, for instance, right? Mind City started literally as a maths assessment app, until I just had to go through how do I bootstrap, and if bootstrapping was for me to get other project here and there and then do stuff whilst I'm building this, it was for me to understand what exactly is the problem with a kid with math. Is it math the problem, or is it the attitude towards math? The moment I realized that it was the attitude towards math, then I realized that, no, it's a soft skills issue. So let's focus on soft skills. And then we started, we just started working on soft skills.
Sure. Dude, we could sit and chat the whole day. Unfortunately, you gave me limited time.
Thank you for having me.
This warrants for round two.
Thank you for having me.
So we'll have another masterclass for an hour on how to build, how to scale, how to create interactive design. No, thank you so much, Kim. Thank you so much for making the time to chat with us. It's been a power-packed episode, just unpacking different challenges in startups, how to create interactive designs, and how to build scalable businesses that users can really relate to. We really appreciate your insights and your teachings there. But again, limited time, man. We need a round two on this masterclass.
I'll be happy for us to have a chat again. I appreciate you guys welcoming me and having this chat. So,
thanks for your time, Kim. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you as well.
Thank you. Ciao.
Bye-bye.